For people who crave the ultimate high, well, they'll have to wait another year. Every June marks the end of the climbing season on Mount Everest. An estimated 300 people attempted the climb this year. Sadly, at least six did not make it back down. Climbing Everest is still one of the riskiest adventures on the planet. Nearly 2,000 climbers have attempted to scale the mountain. Nearly 180 died on its unpredictable slopes. So what is the appeal of this death-defying peak? If you've ever attempted a climb of Everest or given it some thought, join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN, at npr.org. And joining us now to talk about why people choose to climb Mount Everest is Peter Miller, senior editor at National Geographic magazine. He joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
So we all heard from Edmund Hillary, because it's there. Is that the reason?
Well, Edmund Hillary had different reasons, I think, than most of the people who climb today. For Edmund Hillary, it was the result of a lifetime of training, beginning as a teenager in the snowy mountains of New Zealand. For a lot of the people who climb today, it's a different kind of dream. Everest is the biggest stage in the world, and for them, I think they're seeking a little drama.
A little drama. Is this the ambition of every great mountaineer?
That's a little hard to say. Mountaineers are a little embarrassed by what's happening on Everest. It's quite possible that there are a few closet mountaineer Everest would-bes among professional mountaineers, people who have always wanted to climb it but haven't. Mm-hmm. But in general, I'd say that mountaineers are more interested in peaks that appeal to a different kind of challenge. It's not a very attractive mountain to a hardcore mountaineer.
Why not?
Mountaineers seek things because they are difficult, because they're almost too difficult. And there's a certain amount of pleasure that they get out of the beauty of a mountain and attempting something original, a new line on an established peak, climbing a peak that's never been climbed before. The appeal of Everest is something different. It has a mystique that reaches out to the general public, but among climbers, it's a little too crowded, a little too dirty, a little too easy.
A lot of us who only climb mountains in motor vehicles find it a little hard to imagine something as remote and distant as Everest being dirty.
Well, it's a well-traveled peak by now. I was just speaking with a friend of mine, David Brashears, this afternoon, and he was telling me about his experiences. He led a team of 14 filmmakers, actually, up to the top of Everest. They're making a Hollywood film this year. And he was telling me that the lower reaches, base camp, which is about 17,000 feet, is relatively clean. Mm-hmm. Advanced base camp, camp two, is relatively clean. But when you get up into the colder regions, base camp three, it's a mess. And the farther you go on the mountain, the messier it gets until you get to camp four, which is the last camp, which he described as an unmitigated dump.
You talked about mountaineers, professional mountaineers, thinking maybe Everest is too tame, yet six more at least this climbing season. It's pretty risky.
Everest is still a very dangerous place. Above 26,000 feet, you are risking your life every second that you are you remain there. And the best mountaineers know that accidents can happen to the best climbers. It's the uncertainty and the difficulty that lures, I think, the average person as well. But the average person has no business up there unless they are physically fit, unless they're experienced climbers, unless they're there with a very good guide.
Well, now we're going to talk with somebody who can address this personally. Last year, Larry Guller became the first amputee to reach the summit of Mount Everest. It was his second attempt, and he joins us now by phone from his home in Austin, Texas. Good of you to be with us today.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just wanted to just correct you there on just one thing. Tom Whitaker actually was the first technical sort of amputee to stand on top of Everest a number of years ago. I happened to was fortunate enough last year to do it with just my one arm.
Well, given the risks, why did you do it?
You know, I was hearing what was being said before. I think for a lot of mountaineers or climbers, Everest definitely has its attractions. For me, it was something that I saw a photograph of the Himalayas, you know, over 25 years ago, and I've worked pretty much my entire life to for that moment to come to fruition. And I think that's the case for a lot of mountaineers on a lot of mountains. Everest, of course, does have its draw, I mean, solely because it's the highest point on Earth, and it has its dangers, and it does draw people, perhaps, that should not be up there, as was said earlier, and I totally agree with that. However, you know, it's not my right, especially to say who has a right to climb really on any mountain for that matter.
You might have fit into somebody else's definition of people who shouldn't be there.
I think, you know, yeah, to a point. I think at some points we all get very tired on Everest, and you know, it's a push for anyone. I think regardless at any level of mountaineering, you know, you're at. I mean, Everest is the highest, as with a number of other hard challenges around the world, and it's going to push anyone for sure.
Well, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, and joining us now is Sam in Reno, Nevada.
Hi there.
Hi there, Sam.
I live in Reno now, but I used to live in Colorado, and I did a lot of mountaineering there, and at one point I was part of a conversation where people were talking about what body part they were willing to sacrifice to summit Everest, whether or not they'd give up a pinky or a thumb or their toes or a nose. It was way out of my league.
So you changed your mind?
Absolutely. There was no way I was giving up a body part just to climb a mountain.
let me ask you, Gary Guller, you lost a body part before you went up the mountain, but was that something that calculated into your thoughts as you went up?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the last thing I wanted to do was lose another body part, you know, for God's sake, on any mountain, much less I wouldn't wish that or want anybody to climb a mountain with, you know, the potential of losing that. I think, though, when you push the envelopes and try to achieve very challenging feats, that there are some risks that are definitely there. But, you know, I think it's important, as Sam was saying, that to evaluate the risk and if you're willing to accept those risks. And I think a lot of people on Everest and on a lot of other mountains haven't quite evaluated those risks prior to setting off to try to achieve whatever challenge that they're going to do.
Let me just ask Sam, did your friends go on and try it?
A couple did, and one summited. He was part of a group that was collecting garbage, actually, and it took him a couple shots, but he did. And then several did Denali, which is another big feat in mountaineering circles as far as North America goes.
Mount McKinley, also known as?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Peter Miller?
Well, I just wanted to say, unlike Gary, who I congratulate for his climb last year, I am not a mountaineer. But speaking with many mountaineers, I understand there's also something called summit fever, where you can make up your mind in advance of going to the mountain one thing, but once you're there and you see the top and you've perhaps been delayed, your trip has been delayed a couple of times by bad weather, and finally someone says, I think we have a window, you leave those decisions that you made so coolly in your living room behind, and you risk those fingers and toes.
This was your second assault that you finally made it to the top, wasn't it, Gary?
I did, and I mean that's a great point, Peter, for sure. Again, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier about those that, you know, decisions that we make at sea level are very different from decisions that we tend to make higher up. And I think experience and you know, having a good team or a good company that you're working with, you know, while you're up higher on the mountain is beneficial, because it's not just you, perhaps, in your own safety and, you know, the well-being of your team members and the Sherpa, let's say, and other supporters of your expedition on the hill.
We're talking about conquering Mount Everest with Gary Guller, who's done it, and Peter Miller, who's written about it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. How much does an expedition cost? Peter, do you have any idea?
Well, it depends. There are different kinds of expeditions. If you're a private individual, you can basically sign up as a client with a top-notch guiding team for up to about $65,000, and they will take care of everything for you. If you are someone like my friend David Beshears, who's organizing an expedition, you have a number of hard costs, but essentially you have a fee that you must pay to the Nepalese government. You have yaks to hire, you have Sherpas to hire, you have insurance. It works out to be somewhere around $20,000, $25,000 a person.
So that's the minimum.
That's the hard cost for to get a person up the mountain.
And it can go up, obviously, much higher than
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Vidya. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
And you're calling from Minneapolis. Go ahead.
Actually, someone just alluded to my point, which is sort of twofold. But I have to say, I get really angry. I'm from India. I'm not from the Himalayan region. But I get really angry when I hear the rhetoric about conquering Everest.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say that I think it's part of this kind of Western idea of conquering nature, where the Sherpas, who have aided every single person who has summited, they have a reverence for the mountain that is not about conquering anything. We think of the mountain as Mount Himavan. It's the father of the Ganges. We pray to it. We think of it as the source of all of our resources in the subcontinent. And the Sherpas who help everybody summit are never recognized. They're always anonymous. And the white Westerners who have the money to pay them and who litter and who now, luckily, are cleaning up the trash, are the ones who get the media coverage and the fame and the glory. And the people who have to live under those circumstances and who have to kind of create this tourist industry around this sort of macho idea of reaching the top of the world, again, never get any glory. I just wanted to hear what your guests had to say about that.
Gary?
I think in the most part, you're correct there with the, you know, the difference in just thinking. I do feel, however, that there are a lot of expedition leaders out there and a lot of owners and operators of guiding companies that do the very best to the Sherpa and to the staff and the local community as much as they can, for sure. I think you're totally right. I mean, Everest is not a mountain to be conquered. It's a matter of that mountain allowing you passage, and some are fortunate enough to stand on top of her. You know, the Sherpas say that, you know, you are truly blessed and you should show a lot of respect for Everest, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have a successful expedition. And a lot, I do think a lot of people forget that side of it. And I do agree with you that the Sherpa don't get enough credit, but I equally think that there are folks out there that do right by the Sherpa, be it with good wages, good insurance. They do great things for their families. They contribute as much as they can to the environment. It's just unfortunate that, you know, there are a number of folks out there that tend to forget about Everest and its meaning and the respect for the Himalayas and the Sherpa people after they have summited that mountain. Mm-hmm. And I think we can go as a society here in the West a heck of a lot more forward by educating the folks around the world about those mountains, about the people of those mountains, and what it truly does mean to be, you know, honored enough to have, if it's only one day, on the slopes of Everest.
Vidya, thank you very much for the call.
Thanks.
And Gary Guller, we appreciate your time today as well.
Well, I appreciate it. And Gary, take care, Peter.
Bye-bye. Gary Guller joining us on the phone from Austin, Texas. And Peter Miller, we're going to end with this email we got from Eric Haluzak. I hope I got that right. My wife and I are mountaineers here in the Pacific Northwest. We've talked about Everest. Everest has all the appeal of the Mall of the Americas or Disneyland. Give me a 7 to 12 foot, 1,000 foot peak any day. My wife and I were on Mount Washington here in Oregon a couple of years back on a Saturday and saw not another person on our 10-hour round trip. So there are plenty of places other than Everest to go. Peter Miller, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Peter Miller, senior editor at National Geographic Magazine, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.